Billy Pilgrim was on fire, having stood too close to the glowing stove. The hem of his little coat was burning. It was a quiet, patient sort of fire, like the burning of punk. Billy wondered if there was a telephone somewhere. He wanted to call his mother, to tell her he was alive and well. There was a silence now, as the Englishman looked in astonishment at the frowsy creatures they had so lustily waltzed inside. One of the Englishmen saw that Billy was on fire. "You're on fire, lad," he said, and he got Billy away from the stove and beat out the sparks with his hands. When Billy made no comment on this, the Englishman asked him, "Can you talk? Can you hear?" Billy nodded. The Englishman touched him exploratorily, here and there, filled with pity. "My God, what have they done to you, lad? This isn't a man. It's a broken kite." "Are you really an American?" said the Englishman. "Yes," said Billy. "And your rank?" "Private." "What became of your boots, lad?" "I don't remember." "Is that coat a joke?" "Sir?" "Where did you get such a thing?" Billy had to think hard about that. "They gave it to me," he said at last.
"Jerry gave it to you?"
"Who?"
"The Germans gave it to you?"
"Yes." Billy didn't like the questions. They were fatiguing.
"Oh, yank, yank, yank," said the Englishman. "That coat was an insult."
"Sir?"
"It was a deliberate attempt to humiliate you. You mustn't let Jerry do things like that."
Billy Pilgrim swooned. Billy came to on a chair facing the stage. He had somehow eaten, and now he was watching Cinderella. Some part of him had evidently been enjoying the performance for quite a while. Billy was laughing hard. The women in the play were really men, of course. The clock had just struck midnight, and Cinderella was lamenting. "Goodness me, the clock has struck, alack-a-day, and fuck my luck." Billy found the couplet so comical that he not only laughed, he shrieked. He went on shrieking until he was carried out of the shed and into another, where the hospital was. It was a 6-bed hospital. There weren't any other patients in there. Billy was put to bed and tied down and given a shot of morphine. Another American volunteered to watch over him. This volunteer was Edgar Derby, the high school teacher who would be shot to death in Dresden. So it goes. Derby sat on a 3-legged stool. He was given a book to read. The book was The Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane. Derby had read it before. Now he read it again while Billy Pilgrim entered a morphine paradise. Under morphine, Billy had a dream of giraffes in a garden. The giraffes were following gravel paths, were pausing to munch sugar pears from treetops. Billy was a giraffe, too. He ate a pear. It was a hard one. It fought back against his grinding teeth. It snapped in juicy protest. The giraffes accepted Billy as one of their own, as a harmless creature as preposterously specialized as themselves. Two approached him from opposite sides, leaned against him. They had long, muscular upper lips, which they could shape like the bells of bugles. They kissed him with these. They were female giraffes, cream and lemon yellow. They had horns like doorknobs. The knobs were covered with velvet. Why? Night came to the garden of the giraffes, and Billy Pilgrim slept without dreaming for a while. And then he traveled in time. He woke up with his head under a blanket in a ward for nonviolent mental patients in a veterans hospital near Lake Placid, New York. It was springtime in 1948, 3 years after the end of the war. Billy uncovered his head. The windows of the ward were open. Birds were twittering outside. "Pootuweet?" one asked him. The sun was high. There were 29 other patients assigned to the ward, but they were all outdoors now, enjoying the day. They were free to come and go as they pleased, to go home even if they liked, and so was Billy Pilgrim. They had come here voluntarily, alarmed by the outside world. Billy had committed himself in the middle of his final year at the Ilium School of Optometry. Nobody else suspected that he was going crazy. Everybody else thought he looked fine and was acting fine. Now he was in the hospital. The doctors agreed. He was going crazy. They didn't think it had anything to do with the war. They were sure Billy was going to pieces because his father had thrown him into the deep end of the YMCA swimming pool when he was a little boy and had then taken him to the rim of the Grand Canyon. The man assigned to the bed next to Billy's was a former infantry captain named Elliot Rosewater. Rosewater was sick and tired of being drunk all the time. It was Rosewater who introduced Billy to science fiction, and in particular to the writings of Kilgore Trout. Rosewater had a tremendous collection of science fiction paperbacks under his bed. He had brought them to the hospital in a steamer trunk. Those beloved, frumpish books gave off a smell that permeated the ward, like flannel pajamas that hadn't been changed for a month, or like Irish stew. Kilgore Trout became Billy's favorite living author, and science fiction became the only sort of tales he could read. Rosewater was twice as smart as Billy, but he and Billy were dealing with similar crises in similar ways. They had both found life meaningless, partly because of what they had seen in war. Rosewater, for instance, had shot a 14-year-old fireman, mistaking him for a German soldier. So it goes. And Billy had seen the greatest massacre in European history, which was the firebombing of Dresden. So it goes. So they were trying to reinvent themselves and their universe. Science fiction was a big help. Rosewater said an interesting thing to Billy one time about a book that wasn't science fiction. He said that everything there was to know about life was in The Brothers Karamazov by Fyodor Dostoevsky. But that isn't enough anymore, said Rosewater. Another time, Billy heard Rosewater say to a psychiatrist, I think you guys are going to have to come up with a lot of wonderful new lies, or people just aren't going to want to go on living. There was a still life on Billy's bedside table, two pills, an ashtray with three lipstick-stained cigarettes in it, one cigarette still burning, and a glass of water. The water was dead. So it goes. Air was trying to get out of that dead water. Bubbles were clinging to the walls of the glass, too weak to climb out. The cigarettes belonged to Billy's chain-smoking mother. She had sought the ladies' room, which was off the ward for whacks and waves and spars and wafts who had gone bananas. She would be back at any moment now. Billy covered his head with his blanket again. He always covered his head when his mother came to see him in the mental ward, always got much sicker until she went away. It wasn't that she was ugly or had bad breath or a bad personality. She was a perfectly nice, standard-issue, brown-haired white woman with a high school education. She upset Billy simply by being his mother. She made him feel embarrassed and ungrateful and weak because she had gone to so much trouble to give him life and to keep that life going. And Billy didn't really like life at all. Billy heard Elliot Rosewater come in and lie down. Rosewater's bed springs talked a lot about that. Rosewater was a big man, but not very powerful. He looked as though he might be made out of nose putty. And then Billy's mother came back from the ladies' room, sat down on a chair between Billy's and Rosewater's bed. Rosewater greeted her with melodious warmth, asked how she was today. He seemed delighted to hear that she was fine. He was experimenting with being ardently sympathetic with everybody he met. He thought that might make the world a slightly more pleasant place to live in. He called Billy's mother dear. He was experimenting with calling everybody dear. Someday, she promised Rosewater,
I'm going to come in here, and Billy is going to uncover his head, and do you know what he's going to say?
What's he going to say, dear?
He's going to say, hello, Mom. And he's going to smile. He's going to say, gee, it's good to see you, Mom. How have you been?
Today could be the day. Every night I pray. That's a good thing to do.
People would be surprised if they knew how much in this world was due to prayers.
You never said a truer word, dear.
Does your mother come to see you often?
My mother is dead, said Rosewater. So it goes.
I'm sorry. At least she had a happy life as long as it lasted.
That's a consolation anyway.
Yes. Billy's father is dead, you know, said Billy's mother.
So it goes.
A boy needs a father.
And on it went, that duet between the dumb, praying lady and the big, hollow man who was so full of loving echoes.
He was at the top of his class when this happened, said Billy's mother.
Maybe he was working too hard, said Rosewater. He held a book he wanted to read, but he was much too polite to read and talk, too. Easy as it was to give Billy's mother satisfactory answers. The book was Maniacs in the Fourth Dimension by Kilgore Trout. It was about people whose mental diseases couldn't be treated because the causes of the diseases were all in the fourth dimension, and three-dimensional earthling doctors couldn't see those causes at all, or even imagine them. One thing Trout said that Rosewater liked very much was that there really were vampires and werewolves and goblins and angels and so on, but that they were in the fourth dimension. So was William Blake, Rosewater's favorite poet, according to Trout. So were heaven and hell.
He's engaged to a very rich girl, said Billy's mother.
That's good, said Rosewater. Money can be a great comfort sometimes.
It really can.
Of course it can. It isn't much fun if you have to pinch every penny till it screams. It's nice to have a little breathing room.
Her father owns the optometry school where Billy was going. He also owns 6 offices around our part of the state. He flies his own plane and has a summer place up on Lake George.
That's a beautiful lake.
Billy fell asleep under his blanket. When he woke up again, he was tied to the bed in the hospital back in prison. He opened one eye, saw poor old Edgar Derby reading The Red Badge of Courage by candlelight. Billy closed that one eye, saw in his memory of the future poor old Edgar Derby in front of a firing squad in the ruins of Dresden. There were only 4 men in that squad. Billy had heard that one man in each firing squad was customarily given a rifle loaded with blank cartridge. Billy didn't think there would be a blank cartridge issued in a squad that small, in a war that old.